As far as monster movies goes, Godzilla from 2014 is a real highlight as far as I'm concerned, and that film was directed by Gareth Edwards, who recently attended a screening of the 2023 Japanese film Godzilla Minus One, and afterwards he said, "This is what a Godzilla movie should be like." Godzilla Minus One debuted at number one in Japan. It stayed there for 3 weeks. It's the highest grossing Japanese live action movie in North American history. Stick around and we'll talk through what's so good about it. Welcome to Pink Door Culture Club, your eclectic entertainment guide. My name is Jeremiah Burns, and this week we're taking a look at the 2023 Japanese film Godzilla Minus One. It's directed, written, and with visual effects by Takashi Yamazaki, and Ryunosuke Kamiki stars as the central character of Koichi Shikishima, who is a former kamikaze pilot. There's lots to love about this film, and there's a couple of big ideas to kind of talk through from it as well. Remember that Pink Door Culture Club is both a podcast and a YouTube show. It gets released every Thursday afternoon or thereabouts, Australian time. Along with these regular reviews, you'll also find some short form videos called Pop Culture Proverbs that get released during the week. Wisdom for Living, inspired by whatever content we've been looking at recently. If you like the show, don't forget, please subscribe, share, comment, all of that good stuff. You can be in touch with me via the YouTube comments, the Facebook page, or you can email me directly, pinkdoorcultureclub@gmail.com. The first segment of Pink Door Culture Club is called Spellbound, where we stop and we have a think about what's to like and maybe what's not so good about Godzilla Minus One. And the first thing to say is one of the real strengths here is the action sequences and special effects. This film has been nominated for an Academy Award for special effects, and for good reason. Godzilla looks really menacing. Scaly, jagged, angry, huge. He starts off kind of little baby Godzilla at the start. Kind of, you know, he's scary, but he's medium-sized. But, you know, by the middle of the film, he is massive, extremely powerful. Battleships are absolutely no match for him. Neither are landmines. Neither are whole cities or tanks. His stomp is powerful. His scream, his roar, it just kind of shakes the earth. And he has the ability to sort of detonate some sort of explosion that just absolutely incinerates everything nearby. The special effects, they're not perfect. You can still see that this is a CG creature, but they're still amazing, and they do make for some really enthralling action sequences. A second thing I found really interesting about Godzilla Minus One was the setting. And I was talking about this with the person that I saw it with. Like, I, as a Westerner, don't see many films set in post-war Japan. It's unusual for me to see a story that's exploring that world, the devastation, the wasteland, the politics of that era of Japan. The other aspect of the setting is the open ocean. So lots of action sequences and discussions happening out in the open ocean. It makes for a very dynamic action sequence when you've got a monster who's not just stomping around on land, but who's floating in the water, who's swimming, who's climbing onto ships or going underneath ships. You get a little bit of that in Godzilla 2014, but it's even more so here. It reminded me of a movie like Pacific Rim. And it also reminded me, and I subsequently read that there's some deliberate references to Jaws, because they're on this boat that's It's wooden and creaky, and they're tracking this big monster. So some nice references to Spielberg there as well. A third thing I liked about this film were the characters. As always, I think if you're going to have like a big spectacular action movie, it only really hits home if it involves a story with characters that we care about. You get a bit of that in Godzilla 2014, you know, the husband trying to get back to his wife and child and be reunited and his father's legacy. So I think that's a thread that comes through in that film, as opposed to Godzilla versus Kong from 2021, which for me, I don't care. I don't really care what happens between these two creatures screaming at each other and fighting. There's not characters who are strong enough to anchor that action in my view. Whereas in this film, you've got Koichi, Noriko, and Akiko, the main character, the woman who's not his wife, who he's not even, who he's in love with, but he won't take on as his wife for various reasons, and Akiko, who's not her child, not his child, just someone who they've adopted because of the situation post-war. So they're a makeshift family. They grow together after the war, and they're threatened by the appearance of Godzilla. So those are relationships, I think, that give the film heart and allow some of the really important themes of the film to be explored. It's interesting to see Koichi as the central male character continually struggling with overwhelming emotion and grief, whereas Noriko, as the central female character, is presented as a far stronger character who's willing to save others and sacrifice her life for others, which was interesting. They're good characters. It's a good setup. It all makes sense. I got into it mostly. The characters didn't completely hit home for me. It could be that they missed the mark for who I am. It could tell you more about me than about the characters in that sense. It could also be like I had really high expectations of this film because I'd heard all these rave reviews. So maybe I expected more than I was ever going to get. Also, I was pretty tired when I saw this film. So the action sequences kind of work okay in that setting. But, you know, sometimes when you're tired, the quieter stuff doesn't resonate quite as much. A fourth thing I liked about this film was the music and the absence of music. So there's some really epic, you know, film score to go with the action sequences and create that sense of dread. That there's something overwhelming coming our way that we need to be prepared for. And at the end, in the final battle, there's a moment of, a key moment is marked by silence. Very much like Oppenheimer in that sense, where when they, detonate the bomb, there's just absolute silence for an extended period. You get that here in the final kind of showdown with Godzilla. So a lot to like about this film. Really interesting, really engaging. The second segment of Pink Door Culture Club is called Rear Window, where we stop and we kind of look more closely and think more deeply about some of the themes or ideas arising from Godzilla Minus One. The first thing I was thinking about throughout the film is, what is the appropriate response to an overwhelming threat? And what does this film have to say about that? Because I think Godzilla is a metaphor for the nuclear strikes against Japan, you know, foreign, uncontrollable, utterly destructive. And at moments, like I said earlier, Godzilla is able to kind of detonate himself and others and lay waste to everything around him. But also Godzilla is a contrast in terms of how should we respond to this threat. If we fought to the death in World War II for no real gain and such terrible loss, well, how should we respond to this threat? What could we do differently? What mistakes did we make in World War II, and how could we do that differently, I think is a really interesting thing being explored here. And one of the things being explored is that, well, we could take the very formal state-based response. And the characters in this film are pretty, they're pretty critical of the state. They sort of see the state as secretive and controlling and very forceful and unyielding, more of the same regardless of the outcome. Also, they make a big point of sort of talking about how the official, you know, Japanese state or even perhaps cultural view of humanity is it's got a very cheap view of human life. So they talk about how, hey, we built these planes without ejector seats. We adopted in kamikaze behavior during the war. This is a very low view. They're explicitly saying this is a very low view of human life and ultimately something that is regarded and seen as ineffective. And the contrast in the film to that kind of official, formal, state-sanctioned approach would be kind of the grassroots action. So that is one in the film that's far more open, it's far more collaborative, it's grounded in science. So there's this kind of lead character who's interested in science, and so he's kind of taking a fact-based approach to the problem. It's very creative. It's very flexible. There's a plan A and a plan B, and we're going to have to see, you know, what happens. There's a very high view of human life as opposed to the formal state-sanctioned view. It's still very masculine. I don't think, you know, even though the central female character does save one person, she's not involved. I don't think there are any women involved in defeating Godzilla ultimately, but it is effective. This kind of alternate way of dealing with things is quite effective. I think it's a really interesting and nuanced thing to be exploring in a film like this. You know, like this is a monster film on one level, and yet they're kind of exploring these big and asking these big questions about their own society and the strengths and weaknesses of how we deal with existential threats. You know, in this view, the state is not the savior of humanity. But also, while the individual plays a role, the individual is not the savior either. Instead, it's a collective response apart from the state. It assumes some level of common interest, some level of shared interest, some interest and willingness to collaborate. You know, and it did make me think about the extent to which this is the reality for post-war Japan. You know, such great success with Sony and Nintendo and Toyota and Honda and Uniqlo. You know, such creativity and industry and enterprise born from the ashes of that terrible, you know, war that they participated in. In some ways, and even more, you know, this is a separate video, but an even more interesting view is conveyed in Godzilla 2014, especially because in Western films, like, it's usually just like a single hero who's the savior. But in Godzilla 2014, the threat being faced by humanity is another monster, right? There's this other monster, which has kind of been awakened by human meddling with nuclear power and other such things. But that's the threat. And humans have just completely lost control. They cannot do anything to save themselves. Godzilla is the savior in that particular movie. Humans, they do play a role. There is a bit of partnership there with Godzilla, but largely humans in Godzilla 2014 just stand around watching themselves be saved, which is a very humble view of humanity. Whereas in Minus One, it does all still depend on our ingenuity to save ourselves, but it's not something coordinated by, sanctioned by the state. There's a very low view of the state and a very high view of grassroots action. A second and final thing I was thinking about during this film, because it's such a strong theme, is honor, shame, and redemption. Honor, shame, and redemption. In the film, you know, traditional honor lines up with the samurai spirit, where, you know, you suppress emotion, you courageously do your duty for your nation, for the emperor, even when it involves tremendous violence. So the central character is a failed kamikaze pilot who couldn't go through with his duty. And what that leads to for him is a life of punishing himself. So part of the approach, I guess, is to punish yourself through denial afterwards. And even though initially everyone sort of pours shame and scorn on him, eventually people have all moved on, but he is stuck. He is stuck. And the line in the movie is that the war is not over for him, right? And that's an interesting concept, that war continues from this date to this date officially on paper, but for many participants, it extends far beyond that. And so for him, he won't get married. He won't acknowledge his role as a father to Akiko because he's hanging on to the shame that he feels from the war. In the movie, redemption can come from doing the thing you failed to do. So going back and kind of making it right. But it can also involve avoiding the cheap opt-out and sticking around to serve others. So a huge theme in this film is don't just sort of die for something. That's kind of easy. To die for something is easy. Choose to live for something. So quite a positive view of human life, that we need to not just be sacrificing and denying. We need to be positively choosing to live for other people and for other things. It made me think about how, you know, some forms of redemption are quick and easy and high profile and obvious, whereas others are far harder and more real and more meaningful in terms of service to others. I think the resulting ethic in this film is like far more Western and Christian than samurai, in the way that it emphasizes, like, you need to let go of traditional codes. You need to let go of personal issues associated with shame and honor in order to live in genuine service to others. The final segment of Pink Door Culture Club is called The Man Who Knew Too Much, where I just list off some interesting trivia that I've discovered about whatever it is we're looking at. And just two quick things for Godzilla Minus One. Firstly, instead of creating like a new roar for Godzilla, like his scream, his roar, which is incredible, the crew simply played the original Godzilla roar. So I'm assuming that's from the original movie, over loudspeakers, and then recorded the audio. which is a great way, I guess, of honoring that rich film history in Japan. Second thing is, the person who I watched this with, we were kind of discussing, like, what does the minus one refer to? What's the key to understanding that? So the minus one refers to the fact that Japan had already been devastated by World War II, so it kind of been brought down to zero, and then when Godzilla turns up, you know, it puts Japan into the negative. So apparently I was reading that the original Japanese tagline translates to post-war Japan from zero to minus, hence Godzilla Minus One. Okay, so we're at the end of this episode of Pink Door Culture Club. Overall, I really liked Godzilla Minus One. It was unusual and interesting and entertaining to see a non-anime Japanese movie set in post-war Japan, set on the open ocean with Godzilla crawling over battleships and trying to swallow sea mines and all these kind of things, like really dynamic action. Those are definitely some real highlights, but also along with the way that the film raises questions and critiques some pretty, I would imagine, I mean, others could tell me, but some pretty precious cultural ideals from within Japanese society. As I mentioned at the top, remember you can engage with the show as a YouTube show or as a podcast every Thursday afternoon or evening Australian time and via some short form videos during the week. However you're engaging, make sure you like, you follow, you share, you comment, etc., etc. Feel free to be in touch with me via the YouTube comments or the Facebook page or directly at pinkdoorcultureclub@gmail.com. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening.